Hello, I'm Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome back. Okay, when I'm working with someone, I give them a week to come back with a list. And then we talk about it, and I have them do the second column and the cause for the resentment. I said, come back next week with it done. Right? Generally, when I work with someone, we set a day at the beginning and a time. And every week, we meet once a week and move through the sections, a little bit at a time or part of a time. And what I found is that once you're committed to a day, there's a certain amount of accountability to that time and to that day and to the relationship, right? And I found it really effective to maintain that level of accountability that you've been developing over these few months. So people don't always live up to that accountability. You know, not everybody's going to want to do this, you know, because up until now it's been a little easier because they're just writing a bunch of notes in and you're talking about all this stuff. But now it's been put on you to sit down and search inside yourself for what you need to bring to this fourth step, the names that need to be on the list, and the causes for the resentment. Some people get really excited about being able to do the first two columns because it's almost like their inventory. This person did all this stuff to me. This person did all this stuff to me. Right? And one guy, he said, now we're talking. Now I really am feeling good. Yeah. His face sure dropped when we got to the next part, though. And, you know, I just try to encourage people to be realistic because I've worked with people that were just so excited about this and they want to be so thorough. And, you know, that they just come up with this wall of this body of work that's just too hard to get over. And I try to discourage that. But at the same time, I can't tell you what is really bothering you. I can't tell you how many people you're resentful at. I can't tell you if the resentment is valid or not valid. If it's bothering you, it's bothering you. Right? To resent it's something you refeel. It's an anger that you refeel when it comes into your mind. It still bothers you. Right? Does it mean that if it doesn't bother you, you shouldn't put it on the list? I don't know. You pray about it. You ask God to show you which names are supposed to be on the list, and you write them down. You pray about it. You ask God to show you what the cause of the resentment is, and you write it down. You pray about it. You ask God to help you see if you're saying the same thing five times that you could have said in one sentence. Right? Then you add that to it, and you bring them together, and you start to depend on or rely on, right, that there will be this guiding power that will show you what has to be on the list. Again, and I said it's as simple as what it says here in the big book. Where it says, his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, Brown may get my job at the office. Right, Mrs. Jones, she's a nut, she snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend, she's a gossip. Right? They're just like bullet points. Right? But a lot of these you can reduce into one sentence. Right? I actually have examples of these written out that I can send out. If anybody wants me to email them to them, I can do that. Right? Where I've actually finished the inventory for Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, and my wife, where I wrote all four columns in those. And it's pretty interesting. I had a great experience writing them. I was reading this for all these years. I always, was a little bit resentful of Mr. Brown and Mrs. Jones and his employer and his wife. thinking, look at all these things, you know. And it's like when I finally wrote the fourth column on it, I had an experience with it. So, partly because I had to make up what the fourth column looked like, but it certainly made a lot of sense to me. You know? But, God, I don't know if they're on my website or not. They should be. Right. Anyway, you can certainly email me if you're interested. It's Dan, and then whatever the current year is, dan2009@bigbookawakening.com, and I'll email you those examples. I think they're helpful. So where we left off was we asked ourselves why we were angry on page 64, and then it goes on to say, and this is the third column, in most cases we found that our self-esteem or pocketbook or ambition or personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name or injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, or ambition, or personal relationship, or sex relations, which had been interfered with? And it says, we are usually as definite as this example. All right. So they're just talking about the third column here. But it says, but I don't see the third column on this example. I've seen checkbox inventories which just copy this little chart here. All right. It says here, to start with, we're usually as definite as this example. But then on the paragraph below this, it says, we went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And when we were finished, we considered it carefully. So after you've put the name of the resentment and the cause of the resentment, it's asking you to consider it carefully. All right? And it told you some things that they want you to consider. Self-esteem and pride, ambition and security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook. Right? Now, there's two ways you can consider something. You can certainly just consider it in your mind, but if you're going to read it to someone else, wouldn't it be better to write out what your considerations were? Right? That's obvious. So if during the break you got a copy of the outline for the resentment inventory handed out onto the chairs, and you'll see that at the top, there's a little number signs and little brackets where you would put like 1A in the first resentment. And then it's, I'm resentful at. And you take the first name off of your list that you made and you write it on here. And then the cause of the resentment. Right? You write out the cause for the resentment. In some cases, you might write down multiple causes. Then in brackets, write down how you bottom line the cause. Right? Right. Rather than list all these different causes, say, of where somebody's abusive, they did this, A, B, they did this, C, they did this, D, they did this, right? Maybe just saying they were physically abusive, you know, pretty much all is all-encompassing, right? Or just saying they're physically and mentally abusive, right? I think that... Again, this is a line or a sentence that you're coming up with, and it's got to sit right with you, right? So you'll see how those seven areas of self that are listed on this page here are listed down here. Now, some people think that the, you know, you've seen a lot of the charts with the columns where you've got a first column, a second column, a third column, and a fourth column, you know. If you're uncomfortable not having them in columns like that, in a form like that, just write with the page sideways, because then you got the first column, the second column, the third column. Okay, it's the same thing. It's just easier to write the long ways than in the little tiny columns, right? And in this,
this shape for each resentment you got.
I use a different page for each cause of the resentment. Which is why it's important to be realistic with the resentments, because we because it is a lot of work to write on things that are not important. But at the same time, it's certainly a lot more work to do a lot of work on something that's not going to show you things that you need to see. The first inventory I ever wrote was an autobiographical inventory. I elaborated on a lot of the things that I already knew, and now I wanted to share them with you, a bunch of stuff that I already knew, right? Didn't necessarily change my attitude or show me anything different. It sure felt good writing it all out, right? But nothing changed. My next inventory was this booklet with questions from a hospital in the United States. Answered the ones I thought applied, adjusted the ones I thought I could make better, and just again didn't really address the things that it's addressing in the book. So I didn't have the experience that it talks about in the book. I felt good finishing, right? So there was a sense of relief afterwards when it was done. And the same thing with the checkbox style inventories, where you just check boxes. What was affected? Sex relations, yeah. Self-esteem, sure. Right. Security, okay. Again, didn't give me an opportunity to consider what it says here. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Right? Considering it carefully, right, is much more effective when we're held to a different type of format where we can write out how it really affects us. What was the other? There was another inventory, and I forgot what it was. But once we get to this point, though, what I found helps sometimes is just like I gave each other part 1 week, like first column 1 week, come back with it done. Second column 1 week, come back with it done. I found that sometimes it's helpful to do the same thing with the third column. Self-esteem and pride. 1 week, come back with it done. I've seen people go through 80 and 100 pages, just self-esteem and pride. It doesn't take long. Not much excuse to not finish it, right? Does it sound like it's dragging it out over a number of weeks? Yes. But I've had more experience with people taking the whole thing home, with just told to write the whole thing and coming back in a year or two. Right? Because it can be overwhelming when you're digging in this deep. Right? Self-esteem and pride. Right? Just do those two and come back with it done. And they come over and we do some examples. Right? Self-esteem is how I see or feel about myself. I like to also refer to it as the role that I've assigned myself. And all these notes are right here in this guide sheet. So when they go home and they're trying to figure it out, you can remind yourself of what each part is. You know, and you start each sentence with "I am," right? And pride is how I think others see or feel about me. It's the role that I've assigned you, how you're supposed to see me. Now, I know that this part of it can start to look like a math class where your eyes just kind of glaze over, right? So you don't learn this necessarily by listening. You learn how to do this by doing it. And I understand that it can be a little difficult, but you do 10 of these and you never want to do it another way, right? And I'll explain something in a little while that I'll come back to, how it relates to what Carl Jung says back on page 27. So self-esteem and pride are like two sides of a coin. Who I think I am and who I think you should think I am. So for pride, I start the sentence with "others should" or "no one should" or "others can." Right? And just for an example, I've got this one that's been in my book for a long time. It's time for an update, but it's the one that I've already got written out. It's my first wife, Lori. And the cause of the resentment was left me when I was just getting sober and needed her most. It was the cause of the resentment. Right? Dan at 6 months, okay. 3 months earlier, I had about 3 months, and it was advantageous for her to move back in, save a little bit of money, then she was going to consider either staying or moving back out. She didn't know. But Dan at 6 months, before I had done any work, just going to meetings and just doing what we do, and her parents told her, if you don't leave him, we're going to disown you, and we're never going to speak to you again. So she moved out at 6 months, right? So left me when I was just getting sober and needed her most, right? Oh, let's hear it. So here's the role that I've assigned myself. I'm the best husband she could get. Now, people get hung up on this part of it because it's like, but you got to understand, my self-esteem is telling me one thing, right? But I have to attach the fear to it to really understand this. If I thought I was the worst husband she could possibly get, then my name probably would have been in the first column, right? But I'm resentful at her because something challenged something in me that was more along the lines of wasn't somebody she should have left. I'm the best husband she could get. But I start to understand it more when I attach the fear to it, and I let the third column show me the fear, is that I wasn't the best husband she could get, that I'm really not good enough. Right? And I start to see that underneath that idea that I should be the best husband anybody should get is the fear that I'm not a good enough husband for somebody. And that thinking gives power to this thinking. I mean, the fear gives power to this thinking in the third column, right, which drives the ideas that cause the resentment. Pride. How Lori should have seen me. I don't write her name, though, in the third column, because it could have just as easily been somebody else who left me. Right? It's not Lori's inventory. It's my inventory. Right? So for pride, it's no one should think I'm not worth staying with. Right? And the fear that I put next to that is worthless. I use the statements in the third column to show me the fear. I have the word worth in the third column. No one should think I'm not worth staying with. So I allow that to show me what the fear is. Worthless. Fear of being worthless. Right? And that's the role that I've assigned her. She should think that I'm worth staying with. Right? When I'm working with someone, as I said, I send them off. We go through a couple of examples. That's easy. Who I am and how they should be looking at you. Right? Come back next week with those done. They come back and we go over them. Right? And I go over examples so that I can see if they're figuring it out. And then we move to the next two. Ambition and security. Now, ambition is what I want to happen, what I want in this interaction outside. Security is what I need to be okay inside. All right? And I start ambition off with I want, dot, dot, dot. What I have written here is my ambition was I wanted to be loved, and I wanted to be wanted. Right? That's what I wanted to happen out here. So fear is simply fear of being not loved and not wanted. Right? It's not complicated. Right? I know that some people's inventories include things like spiders and snakes and stuff. And it's like sometimes those are reasonable fears to have. Right? Things that bite, things that can hurt you. Right? Right? I'm talking about the fears that drive my life, that control my the way I live. Right? The things that are driving the thinking in this third column. So, as I said, and the security. Security is inside. What I need inside to be okay. So I start this with, I need dot, dot, dot to be okay. And what I got here is I needed to not be abandoned to be okay. So the fear is simply abandoned. Right? Now watch how this works. Deep down inside, I had this feeling that I absolutely didn't want to be abandoned. I couldn't be abandoned to be okay. Right? Another fear could be that could attach to that would be being alone, right? Fear of being alone, so I didn't want to be abandoned. Right? And in order to feel not that I wasn't abandoned, what I needed to happen out here in ambition was that I wanted to be loved and wanted. Right? And in order to be loved and wanted just how I wanted to or needed to be loved and wanted, then I had to assign you a role on how you're going to interact with me. No one should ever think that I'm not worth staying with. Right? Right? So I've assigned Lori a role in my little play here, and me a role here, as I'm the best husband she could get. Right? So this thing kind of works up and down, right? The next two, after they come back and I've checked their work on that, and we go through the next examples for the next two, which is personal relations and sex relations. I look at personal relationships. Oh, and I throw in pocketbook here, because if it's not about money, I don't write anything on it. Right? If there is money attached to this, then we do write something on it. Some people like writing on things like under pocketbook, like the value I've put on situations. But I think pocketbook means pocketbook. Right? Means money. So how I define these three things is the personal relationships is my deep-seated idea of what I believe this relationship is supposed to look like between a husband and a wife, right? Or a mother and a son, or one AA member to another AA member, right? What is my deep-seated idea of the way this relationship is supposed to look like? And I look at sex relations not as a sexual kind of type of relation, but as a male or a female. Because there's a whole complete sex inventory, right? So how I like to look at it here in the sex relations is, what does a real man do in a situation like this, right? So under personal relations, my deep-seated beliefs of how this relationship is supposed to look, right? Like wives trust their husbands, mothers respect their sons' choices, real friends always agree with me. Right? What I have here for this inventory is wives never leave their husbands no matter what they do. Right? And the fear that I wrote next to that was being alone. Right? For sex relations, right? What I have is a real man commands the respect of their wife. Which might sound pretty arrogant, but underneath that is the fear that I'm not respected. Then there's pocketbook. Pocketbook is how it affects my finances. No one should disregard the value of my financial support. The fear of being not valued. Now, watch how this works, right? Sex relations is who I think a real man is. I take this real man and I put it into the relationship that happens to be a man and a woman, a husband and a wife. My deep-seated belief system is wives never leave their husbands no matter what they do, right? This is the way a wife interacts with a real man. Not necessarily me, but this is the way it's supposed to look, right? So in order for this interaction to go this way, and my deep-seated beliefs of how this is supposed to look, there's certain things I need to happen inside for my security to be okay. And for those things to happen, I want this stuff to happen around me outside in my ambition, right? And in order for this to happen out here, you have to behave a certain way in this what I've written in Pride, and I have to be a certain person. So I've assigned me a role, and I've assigned you a role in my play, right? And so all of these things just kind of interconnect and constantly bring you deeper and deeper and deeper inside of yourself. Right? And next to each one is a fear. Right? Okay. On 66, let's see. Parallel. The first thing is apparent, that the world and its people were often quite wrong. And to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It's plain to see that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness, to the precise extent that we permit these. Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? Here it says that I permit these things. But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it's fatal. Right? Resentment is fatal for me. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us, to drink is to die. Picture walking down the street in a good place. Someone does something that really pisses you off. Where are you now? Completely shut off and focused on this thing that just happened. Completely shuts you off from the sunlight of the spirit. You know, what happened? It was just minutes ago that you were just walking down the street and everything was okay. Now you've permitted this thing to block you completely off, and you'll carry that thing all, depending on what it is. It could be through the rest of the day, and it could be for the rest of your life if it's not really addressed. Right? And isn't that really the way we've lived? Most of us live in a third column society where we move through life just with these deep-seated belief systems, right? Never ever going beyond that to look underneath these things. It says if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. Now, brainstorm has taken on kind of a different meaning, but if you look in an old dictionary, I found is a brainstorm is a transient fit of insanity. Like a tantrum. Being grouchy and throwing tantrums are dangerous for me, right? They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but the alcoholic for the alcoholic, these things are poison, right? So we turn back to the list, for it held the key to our future, right? So I'm going to bottom line this paragraph for you, just to get to the meat of it. The key to my future is being in a place where I can master my resentments. That's what this paragraph says. The key to my future is being in a place where I can master my resentments. And it's going to go on to tell me just how to go about doing that. It says, this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we didn't like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So, if you turn to the next page, I got the word realization from the text here where it says, we realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. So somebody I was working with started calling it the realization, and it just kind of stuck. So how do I see that the people that have wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick like I am? Right? If they're spiritually sick like I am, that means that they must do the things that I've done. Or I must do the things that they've done. Right? And all we have to work on is what we've written down. Right? So the instruction here is how, not did, but how have I done the things I've resented in column 2 to the person I've listed in column 1 and or others? So how have I done column 2 to column to the person in column 1 or other people? Right? So I turn the page over and I look at column 2 and it says, left me when I was just getting sober and needed her most. Right? Right after I got married, my mother passed away, and some other things happened, and it just kicked everything up a notch, and I started getting way out of control just like 6 months to a year after we got married. And so where I saw how I've done the things in column 2 to the person in column 1, I saw I left her alone a lot while I was drinking. I left her way before she left me. Right? Wasn't coming home, hanging out at bars with friends. I left her alone a lot. And, she turned into somebody that, or life turned into something that she didn't expect, and she turned into somebody that she didn't want to be. And obviously I turned into somebody that I didn't want to be, you know, and but ultimately, I see that I left her way before she left me. Right? So I see how I've done. I see how the things that I didn't like in her are the things that I found objectionable about myself. And when I saw that, there's this thing that deep down inside that just kind of turned. Right? You know, and it made me sad because I realized that, that I obviously had really hurt her. Right, with my behavior. And then after that, I go down to this next part where it says, referring back to our list again, this is on 67, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, resentful, and frightened? Right? Though the situations had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other persons involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was not ours. I'm sorry. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So there's four things it talks about: self-seeking, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. Looking at where I was self-seeking, I look at self-seeking as my selfish actions. And selfishness is my selfish attitude. I've sent the person I'm working with home just to do the realization. There's no reason they can't be done in a week. Right? If they're done sooner, I will work with them sooner. Right? I don't necessarily hold them to a week, but it's usually not done sooner. Right? It's the accountability to a particular day that seems to keep them moving forward. It's like, I have to have this ready by tomorrow. Got to do it no matter what I have in front of me. Right? Same thing with self-seeking and selfishness. I give them 1 week, come back with it done. So for the self-seeking actions, I look around at what were the actions that were selfish that I did in the relationship. Left her home alone a lot. Stayed out late drinking. Sometimes didn't come home. Only concerned with what I needed. I was married, acting single. So for selfishness is my attitude. And I asked myself, what was I thinking? What was my attitude while I was doing the actions above? It's my life. I'm not hurting anyone. She has no right to tell me how to live. She was only my wife. Right? And writing it down, you see the insanity of the thinking. But, you know, it was what I was thinking while I was doing those things. Right? And when they come back, we go over, the next week, I go over them with the people I'm working at, with, and then we go over some of the next two. Dishonesty and afraid. Dishonest or afraid. And if there's any harms, I tell them to write any harms that they see on the bottom of this page. So dishonesty, I look at as the lies I tell myself, the delusions that I have, the self-delusions. Right? What were the lies I was telling myself that resulted in the selfish thinking above? So I look at the selfish attitude that I have above, and I ask myself, what was the delusions that I had or the lies I was telling myself in the thinking I just wrote about? Right? I was in the delusion that marriages can't last and they'll always fail anyway. Right? Which was interesting that came to me because both of my parents had quite a few marriages. One had four and the other one had three. And somehow I seem to have got that same idea that marriages are not permanent. And underneath that, I ask myself, what are the fears that drive the delusions above? Right? So I don't just do this brain dump of stuff that's coming out of my head. This stuff is all attached to the next thing that I just wrote above it, or to the previous thing that I just wrote above it. So my fear that I wrote here is I'm never going to be good enough to keep a relationship going, and I'll end up alone ultimately. Right? So, and the harm that I wrote under here is drank everything away and basically trashed the marriage. So remember on 62 where it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. We see that all through the third column. And now it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, right? And in this place of extreme self-centeredness, this thinking on the fourth column this behavior in the self column, in the fourth column, powers the thinking in the third column, right? And I look at these fears that I wrote next to the third column, right? And I look at the idea that if I didn't have those fears, right, then when column one does column two, I might still have the thinking, but I'll find neutrality if they're not driven by these fears. Right? And ultimately that's the goal, right? Is to find a sense of neutrality in spite of my deep seated belief system. Right? And I'm just gonna end with this. Just like the third column can be discussed backwards, I have deep-seated fears, right, that I can't do anything about. And out of those deep-seated fears come these self-delusions, these lies that I tell myself in dishonesty. And out of these self-delusions comes a particular attitude, a selfish attitude, because I feel like I need to protect myself from the world. And in order to protect myself, I do these behaviors in self-seeking, these selfish behaviors that are designed to protect what I think that I need to protect. And these things power the thinking in the third column so that when I put myself, this real man, into this relationship, right, and it's supposed to look like this in personal relationships, and this is the way this marriage is supposed to look, right, and in order for it to look like that, there's certain things that I need deep down inside to be okay to happen. So insecurity, and I want an ambition for these things to happen as an interaction between us. You know, I wanted to be loved, and I wanted her to want me, right? I needed those things to be okay with this. So I've assigned her a role in my little play, right? And me a role in my little play. But when column one does column two, right, and this thinking comes up, and it's driven by this fear. I can't find the place of neutrality that will keep me neutral to the situations that continually happen to us throughout the day. Right? Certainly, I'm not going to be resentful at everybody, but we've got this lifetime of stored situations in our head, you know, that we just somehow keep alive. Right? You know, and all this stuff blocks us from this place of neutrality, blocks us from this open connection that that stops the flow of this power from going through us. And what we find as we start to understand this, it's not the easiest inventory. But when Carl Jung said that what we need is ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces in the lives of these men, and we write all that stuff down on the third column, and we see that stuff has to be cast out, and a new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate us, we see that this program gives us exactly what the doctors could not give us, is an open channel to a spiritual connection, right? And this is the kind of inventory that you will grow into, and if you put some effort into it, you'll improve as you do it, and you'll grow spiritually through understanding how this all works, right? And it continues over the years to allow me to have a deeper experience with the same process, right? So the time is up. So we're going to hit on the rest of the fourth step tomorrow and get into the rest of the steps before the end of the day. Thanks very much.
Just a few announcements, guys. Are you enjoying the workshop?
Yes.
I've got a new friend who's over 40 years sober here that's very excited about this. Isn't that wonderful that the older sober members can be touched with the spirit to have a new experience? So it's like it's never done. We're not cured after all.